Hello and welcome to the Tech Dirt Podcast. I'm Mike Masnick.
The world is increasingly technological, so we have better get methodical. Bringing precision to critical digital journalism with the singular vision of a modern monocle. Stopping the copyright bullies from pulling the wool on us. Facing and taking on all the blatant hate and trolls. Document the ways that they aim to take control. Scrutinize and do their lies and make them fold. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get hurt. So grab a shovel and dig up the tech dirt. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get hurt. So grab a shovel and dig up the tech dirt.
It is, fairly well known that there is certainly a major child sexual abuse, or CSAM, as it's usually called, issue happening online. One lesson that I've heard repeatedly from trust and safety experts is that if you have a website that allows any sort of uploading or transfer of content, you have a CSAM problem, whether or not you know it. Over the last few years, I think somewhat in coordination with the larger TechLash narrative, there has been a lot of anger and blame often directed at the tech platforms for not magically making the problem go away, with the implied suggestion that the tech platforms just don't care, and that if only they did care, suddenly this would not be as big an issue. A few months back on the podcast, we had Maureen Flatley, who is an expert in child protection laws, arguing that many people had this issue almost entirely backwards, that the tech platforms as mandatory reporters were actually doing exactly what they were supposed to be doing in reporting any CSAM that they found to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, better known as NCMEC. And that it was a law enforcement issue that needed to be fixed, not necessarily an internet liability issue. NCMEC runs a program called the Cyber Tip Line, which allows it to receive reports of CSAM. Internet companies have a legal requirement to report any CSAM that they find to the Cyber Tip Line, who then is supposed to pass the relevant information on to local law enforcement to deal with any criminal behavior that is found in the reports. I'd heard in the past that somewhere around 5% of reports to the Cyber Tip Line actually resulted in some sort of law enforcement action. But in general, what was happening with the Cyber Tip Line seemed to be something of a black box with no real clarity on how well it was working or perhaps not working and where any problems might lie. Now, the folks at the Stanford Internet Observatory have released a massive and super useful new report. Based on a ton of research and dozens of interviews with people involved with the Cyber Tip Line from all different stakeholder positions. It is a super valuable contribution to the discussion. The report is the sort of first public report I've seen that really delves into both the strengths and the weaknesses of the current Cyber Tip Line and what is happening with it. There was so much in the report that I ended up writing two separate posts on TechDirt about it to break it down. One post was going to be just too much to handle. And now I'm happy to say that we have two of the authors on the report. There's a long list of folks who contributed to the report, but we have two of them on the podcast to talk about it. Today we have Shelby Grossman and Rihanna Pfefferkorn. Shelby, I'm going to start with you. Can you talk a little bit about the underlying reason and thinking behind putting together this report?
So we decided to start this research project because we had heard from people with a wide variety of viewpoints about law enforcement that the Cyber Tip Line wasn't fully living up to its potential. And so we kind of wanted to figure out, like, what exactly did that mean and why it wasn't living up to its potential.
Cool. So one of the things that stands out in the report, and I mentioned this in one of the posts that I wrote about it, was how many of the challenges around improving the system, which I think everyone pretty much agrees, like, it would be good if the system worked better, is that there are some really serious legal issues and certainly trade-offs involved, some of which are around Fourth Amendment questions and some of which are just involved in kind of like the handling of CSAM content. So Rihanna, I was going to ask you if you could talk a little bit about well, let's start with the underlying Fourth Amendment issue that really sort of, I think, filters through a bunch of the challenges that are discussed in the report.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different doctrines under the Fourth Amendment that make it a little difficult to improve the system here. The Fourth Amendment, as listeners are probably aware, prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. If a search is warrantless, it's generally considered to be unreasonable. Private actors are not bound by the Fourth Amendment, but with that said, the government can't make a private actor carry out a search that it couldn't do itself. If the government pressures or forces a private actor to do a search, then the private actor becomes an agent of the government. And this is one of the main doctrines that comes into play in the cyber tip line context, which is federal law says that if a platform finds CSAM on its platform, it has to report it. But the law can't force it to look because of this Fourth Amendment issue. And the reason for that is that if the private actor were to be searching because the government made it or told it to or pressured it into doing so by, for example, threatening ruinous liability if they didn't, then that search would basically be the action of a government agent. And because platforms aren't law enforcement, they don't have warrants to search the way that they do for CSAM. And so all of the voluntary searches that platforms now do would become warrantless surveillance. The usual remedy for a Fourth Amendment violation is to exclude the fruit of the unlawful search from evidence. And so trying to force tech platforms to look for CSAM would backfire because anything that was turned up as the result of a search done with a government agent hat on by a platform because they'd been coerced into looking would not be admissible in court anyway. And so that's one of the two big doctrines here. The other one being what the scope is of what's known as the private search doctrine, mm-hmm. which is, as said, private actors aren't bound by the Fourth Amendment. And that means that a private actor can search for search somebody else's stuff and hand over what they find to the police. And the police can repeat that search, but they're not allowed to exceed it. And so that again comes into play here, where the scope of what a platform does in terms of its search is something that the government, or as I think we'll probably discuss, NCMEC, can do only as much as the platform itself did, as some human at the platform did in looking for in conducting a search, and they cannot go beyond the scope of that. And so, both of those two doctrines place some considerable constraints on how everybody in this ecosystem interacts.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, because I think it does come up, and will be important in the rest of the discussion. And you know where that really seems to show up. In the discussion in the report is that some of the reports to the cyber tip line are more automated, where the company itself has not necessarily looked at the material in question. And when that happens, or if they, if and correct me if I'm wrong, if they don't indicate to the cyber tip line that they have actually looked at the material, then NCMEC can't look at the material either. And if law enforcement wants to, then they would need to get a warrant to actually examine the underlying material. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's actually a split of authority on okay. this question. And to back up a little bit, the reason that NCMEC can't open files that weren't opened by the platform or has ceased engaging in that practice is because of a couple of court rulings. Including a Tenth Circuit ruling by then Judge Gorsuch, who's now on the Supreme Court, find that NCMEC counts as a government entity or agent, and therefore what it does has to also abide by the Fourth Amendment. Of course, NCMEC can't get warrants, but that just means that if they receive a report from a platform that does not have the checkbox in the reporting form checked that says that the whole file was viewed by the platform, then NCMEC will not open that unopened file. They will kick it out to law enforcement, who in turn would have to go and get a warrant themselves. There have been, as I mentioned, some court cases coming out in different directions on this, where in terms of the scope of the private search doctrine, some court cases say you have to get a warrant if there wasn't a human who had opened it themselves, right. like actual platform review by a human moderator. And then there are some court cases that have said that it is satisfactory to the private search doctrine if there is a hash match for the current file is a hash match to a file that had been previously opened by somebody at the platform, perhaps years earlier, but that is also itself confirmed to be known CSAM. So if somebody had confirmed at some point in the past that a hash match to the current file is known CSAM, then it's okay for NCMEC and for the police to open up the current file. But because of the risk of potentially undermining an investigation, NCMEC will not neither NCMEC nor law enforcement have much of an incentive to say, let's just side with the less conservative view here and go ahead and open things anyway. So there's an incentive to say, well, there's a split of authority here, but we'd rather go with the safer course of action.
The one that isn't going to toss out the evidence. Yeah,
exactly. And so that's an area that, as the report mentioned, it would be nice to have some sort of resolution on that split, because one of the things that we talked about with respondents was that there is a lot of ambiguity in terms of what do you have to report, what is the scope of the private search doctrine, what might cross the line into turning into a government agent, which is the thing everybody is most afraid of here.
Right.
So a lot of the legal ambiguity, I think, drives sort of more of a buffer zone around not necessarily going out on a limb on a lot of these issues. And that, I think, can act to somewhat maybe lead to a less optimized system than outside viewers might wish to see.
Yeah. I'm sort of wondering with the hash matching, given that, you know, so many platforms use like PhotoDNA or whatever for hash matching, could it be that like if one platform had viewed the content and then another platform matches the hash, does that count? Or has that even come up yet? Or is that too much to deal with?
It's a great question. We know that there are a number of different hash lists that are available,
right,
that platforms can potentially draw upon. They, at least in the US, they do not want to have lists that come from any government actors for Fourth Amendment reasons.
Right.
And so I don't know, and it would probably bear looking through all the various cases on hash matches to see like whose hash match is it? And like one of the questions that comes up in these cases in terms of determining like, is this satisfactory or, you know, do you need human eyes on it, is, well, how reliable is this technology?
Right.
Is there a risk of a collision? Is there something else that might be a match for the same thing? And so that's where we see some disagreement by the courts, where some are like, this is extremely reliable, and others are like, are they though? So that's one of the things is, you know, human eyes looking at something, even there, you know, we heard from some of our respondents, when you have a human being looking at it, sometimes you get age difficult pictures. And as your terrific posts on our report mention, all of the incentives here are for the platform to over-report,
right,
rather than try and make that call themselves. And so there are all these different areas where ambiguity or uncertainty can creep in, even if we're talking about something that, you know, seems like, well, the math isn't going to lie, right? This is a particular hashing technology, and it's highly reliable. Humans aren't even that highly reliable, honestly.
Yeah. So you know, one of the things that I wrote about was just how, like, the incentives are all kind of screwed up, and how, and not in a way that necessarily makes for an easy fix, but that there are problems with sort of all of the stakeholders involved. And so I wanted to shift over, we talked a little bit about, you know, with the Fourth Amendment issues, but I want to talk about some of the other issues that came up, starting with the law enforcement side of it. So Shelby, I think I'll go back to you on this question. You know, one of the things that struck me, there were a whole bunch of like really eye-opening things that I was totally unaware of in sort of reading the report, which is, you know, part of what makes it fascinating. But, you know, there is this whole system. Do you actually, why don't you explain it? Cause it'll be better than me trying to explain it. The whole like ICAC task force setup, and how does that work with the cyber tip line?
So when NCMEC receives a cyber tip line report, they attempt to geolocate it. If they can't geolocate it, they make it available to US federal law enforcement. If they can geolocate it, if it is going to a country outside the US, they send it often, though not always, to that country. Sometimes they'll make it available, for example, to like the HSI attaché for that country. If they can geolocate it to a certain place in the US, they will either send it to federal law enforcement in the US or one of these Internet Crimes Against Children task forces. There are 61 of these ICAC task forces, so there's usually like at least one per state. And these task forces are staffed with detectives who are experts in investigating internet crimes against children. And they will either decide to investigate the reports in-house, to send the reports to local police departments that are affiliates with them, which means they've been trained on how to take cyber tip line, how to investigate cyber tip line reports, or they'll just decide, like, if it's a meme, you know, we're not going to investigate it at all.
And so some of the interesting things that came up there was that some police forces, you know, either didn't want to affiliate with an ICAC for some reason, with a task force for some reason or not. And that some who had affiliated then were trying to unaffiliate for some reason or another. So that was really sort of surprising to me. Can you describe a little bit about sort of what's happening there and what the thinking was and what you heard from folks that you spoke to?
Yeah, the first thing to note, importantly, is that the number of local police agencies that are affiliating with the ICAC task forces is increasing over time. So that's like a good trend. Mm-hmm. We don't have access to the raw data, but we heard that from someone who does have access to the raw data. That being said, not all local police agencies are affiliating with their ICAC task force. And typically, or often, this is because they don't want to take on the burden of investigating all of these cyber tip line reports. They think that if they don't affiliate, the ICAC task force itself will investigate reports that are related to their jurisdiction, which may be the case, but given how overworked the task forces are, is certainly not always the case. So that's an interesting dynamic. And then, as you mentioned, we heard of some isolated examples of local police departments unaffiliating with the task forces because they didn't feel like they were able to get to the cyber tip line reports fast enough and possibly were worried about liability. There's kind of like a related issue too, which we heard about, which is just that detectives who focus on crimes against children frequently feel like their higher ups aren't sufficiently prioritizing these crimes. You know, we can speculate on why that might be, like maybe because there isn't as much community pressure to investigate these crimes as other crimes. But that was an interesting kind of observation as well.
Yeah. There are a bunch of things probably worth digging into on that. So one is like there was some concern because there had been some court cases, and we're getting back to kind of like the legal issues that pop up, where police departments sort of got in trouble for taking too long to investigate the reports. Do either one of you want to talk about sort of what happened there?
Sure. We heard about this case from one of our interviews, maybe a couple of our interviews, and I went and did some digging and found out that there was a situation where NCMEC, which some of what they do is to try and monitor the open web and look for CSAM on their own, not just rely on reports that come into the cyber tip line. They had found some CSAM online. They had flagged it to the appropriate ICAC. That ICAC, for reasons that are unclear, did not send that on to the local police department in that metro area for a while. And so once it landed on the local police department's desk, it then took another little while. And overall, it took 6 months before the arrest of the person involved in the upload, which turned out to be a foster parent who was abusing his foster children. And that was the content that he was posting online. The foster children, through an attorney, sued the state for basically for Child Protective Services failures, where neither the ICAC task force nor the local police agency had reported to the Child Protective Services the way they were supposed to do, and also sued both the large Metro Police Department that was in charge of the task force, as well as the other local police department for the particular city where the offender was located. And altogether, this resulted in a settlement of over $10 million against these various state and local government defendants. And what we had heard from respondents was that that really kind of affected the willingness of participating in this task force affiliation, in as far as, okay, well, if I have a million other things to do and something slips through the cracks, we're going to get sued to the tune of $10 million. We'd rather just, you know, bounce that back on somebody else, make it somebody else's problem, was one of the liability fears that we had heard arising from what may potentially have just been a one-off case. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't hear about any other cases like that, but $10 million is not nothing. And it seems to have had an effect.
Yeah. I mean, in reading through some of it, like, I might be biased. I probably am biased, but like it struck me as some of, you know, not all, right? There were a whole bunch of these things that were sort of failures on the law enforcement side that are, again, like getting to the incentives of the system and kind of the legal realities of it. But some of them felt just like law enforcement, like, gosh, this is tough to deal with and we don't get enough, you know, nobody cares about it. So we're just not really going to deal with it. How much of that came across in sort of the responses that you got from folks?
So the example that came up like repeatedly in interviews with, with law enforcement was of burglaries. So detectives who focus on crimes against children would say things like, "We feel like our higher ups prioritize crimes like burglaries over these crimes." And the reasoning they gave, though I'm not an expert on this, is that there's often a lot of pressure on law enforcement to investigate burglaries because an investigation is needed for insurance purposes. And so that these kinds of incentives can shape like how law enforcement, you know, prioritizes man time. So that was one thing we heard.
Yeah. One of the other things that again sort of gets to like the priorities, but in a different way, was just kind of like the triage question, right? And there's a discussion in the report on how it doesn't feel like there is a real process for triaging some of the reports, that it's very much by gut. And so I was wondering if you wanted to discuss sort of what you learned there.
So for people who work on online child safety, everyone is very, very, very familiar with the issue that law enforcement are overwhelmed with the volume of cyber tip line reports. So that's not like the contribution that we're making in this report. Mm-hmm. I think our main contribution is that we find that law enforcement, as you said, feel like they don't have the ability to accurately prioritize reports for an investigation. And to some extent, the volume issue is less of an issue if there's a really clear, systematic, accurate process for figuring out which of these reports should rise to the top. And there are a lot of different reasons why it's hard to triage. You know, part of it relates to what Rihanna was talking about, namely, you know, frictions related to opening these files. But there are other issues as well. For example, platforms not always knowing which cyber tip line report fields are most important to complete. So the cyber tip line form just has tons and tons of fields, and most of them aren't required. And if you're not, you know, if you don't have experience working in law enforcement, it's not always clear which fields are most important. So for example, you know, we heard from respondents that in addition to the time of an incident, it's very important that the platform describe how they define the time, including the time zone. And then without that information, it's just going to be an added friction for law enforcement. And so they might just like deprioritize reports that lack that field being completed. But many platforms don't actually know that field is important, and no one's really willing to put in writing, hey, these are the fields that are most important. So that's like one of the issues related to triage. And then the other issue that really impedes triage is just, you know, NCMEC's lack of sufficient technical staff. There are many, many things that NCMEC could be doing to help enrich cyber tip line reports that they just don't have the resources to do.
And one of the things that also sort of surprised me in the report, and maybe this is related to what you were just talking about, or maybe not, correct me if I'm wrong, was that, you know, the lack of willingness to write some of this down in terms of like what's important and what's not gets back to some of the legal issues we were talking about before, about whether or not, you know, this is government agents instructing tech companies how to act, in which case do they become an agent of the government, and therefore there's sort of a desire not to write stuff down, not to instruct the companies. Was that part of the issue here?
Yeah, definitely. We heard this, that there's a lot of awareness of the government agent issue on all sides, mm-hmm. from law enforcement, from NCMEC, from the platforms themselves. And so what we learned was that NCMEC avoids giving direct advice to platforms on what to include in the report or what not to do, how to make the report more actionable. Platforms really want to know this, and they want to know how best to complete this confusing form. But for understandable reasons, NCMEC doesn't want to risk telling them what to do. And so what we learned was that while NCMEC will provide some tips when they are first onboarding a new platform that's new to the cyber tip line reporting process. They don't document that in writing anywhere because it could be used against them by a criminal defense attorney in court later on. And another thing that we learned that I found surprising was that, well, this part isn't surprising, which is that there's a lot of turnover at platforms mm-hmm. in child safety teams. It's not an easy job to have, but that means that whoever got onboarded may soon depart the company, and then that institutional knowledge of best practices from the onboarding may get lost. And then whoever takes over might not necessarily have that same expertise. And so rather than being able to ask NCMEC directly for, you know, direct feedback, or much less law enforcement wants to see, instead, platforms often will go to the Tech Coalition, which is an industry association that contains no government actors, mm-hmm. doesn't contain NCMEC, it's only industry, and they can provide a set of best practices and tips on how to make reports more actionable. But one of the impediments there is that it is a paid membership organization. The cheapest tier costs $10,000 a year. And there's quite a long tail of electronic service providers right. that only submit a small number of reports each year, or may not really be in the user-generated content business model at all. And this is kind of incidental to what they have to report it, but it's not really their main line of business the way a social media platform might be, for example. And so there's not very much incentive for them to shell out 10 grand in order to have access to those kinds of, you know, exclusively non-governmental compilations of advice.
Yeah. So there was one, I mean, there's so much more in this report, but I want to try and get through it all in the time that people will listen to it. That one other thing on the law enforcement side that struck me as surprising and interesting was it mentioned, it didn't go that deep into this, around that prosecutors, local prosecutors were often hesitant to bring cases, in part because of the difficulty of actually like finding a jury to handle a CSAM case. Do you want to discuss that a little bit and sort of where the issues were there?
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't want to overstate our findings here. We didn't talk to a million prosecutors sure. or anything like that, but we did hear that jurors will frequently intentionally try to disqualify them. Potential jurors will intentionally try to disqualify themselves from serving on a jury if they think they're going to have to see CSAM. And from a prosecutor's perspective, if you know that one of these cases is going to take much longer to, you know, fill up a jury pool, that might disincentivize you from bringing this kind of case to trial. And then, you know, we heard some really interesting examples also about judges not wanting to view CSAM. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, a judge might not have to view CSAM if the, you know, content of the file isn't contested. But you can imagine cases where it would be useful for the judge to see it to inform sentencing decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the report definitely notes, and it's easy to see how, you know, this is a real challenge where it's like, you don't want to expose the jury to, but you also have to have the jury know what it is that is the issue in the case, which is a very sort of complex and challenging issue with obviously no easy way to deal with it. So I want to move on a little bit to the NCMEC side. You mentioned, Shelby, already the technology and technologist issue, and that is detailed in the report as well. But I wanted to dive a little bit deeper into what are the issues there. There is, you know, it struck me as the unsurprising side of it is that, you know, the technology is old and not necessarily fully updated, and but, you know, what other issues did you find on the technology side from the cyber tip line NCMEC side of things?
Yeah. So I'll let Rihanna focus on some of the issues related to NCMEC's inability to use cloud services. Mm-hmm. But to give an example of why NCMEC's lack of technical resources matters, NCMEC is uniquely suited to do a couple of things. One of those things is deconfliction, which is the word used in this space to describe linking reports that involve the same offender. So NCMEC, because they have both cross-platform and cross-jurisdiction ability, they are uniquely suited to be linking these reports that are about the same offender so that multiple law enforcement jurisdictions aren't working the same case. And they're also uniquely suited to be enriching reports, for example, by leveraging like an API that could tell you whether an IP address in a cyber tip line report was also an IP address that is known to be very active on a peer-to-peer file sharing network that, you know, involves trading CSAM, because that kind of enrichment is exactly the kind of information that would help law enforcement triage between two very similar looking cyber tip line reports and would increase the likelihood that the report they pick to investigate is most likely to lead to the rescue of a child. But both of those things, the deconfliction work and the tip enrichment work, just require a lot of like technical work. And so the lack of resources that they have for that is what matters there. But I don't know, Rihanna, if you want to talk about the cloud stuff.
Yeah, sure. The one of the other impediments to improving the technical side of the system is that NCMEC is the only entity other than law enforcement that has any kind of legal authority to possess CSAM. They have a limited grant of immunity under federal law that allows them to maintain this in order to, you know, process and send it out to law enforcement. That immunity grant does not extend to outside vendors. There is currently pending legislation in Congress that would extend that limited immunity grant to outside vendors, but that's why they can't use cloud hosting services. One of the pieces of press coverage that covered our report included a story about how NCMEC had tried to approach a cloud services provider to try and get external hosting, only for the company to get cold feet once the legal department found out about it. Because again, like the risks here of the punitive fines for possessing completely radioactive material like this made it not worth the while to put their necks out like that. So the ability to use cloud services and rocket into the 2010s, you know, or late 20-aughts is sort of contingent upon changes and updates in the law to allow more outside entities to step up to help and help to modernize a system that everybody seems to agree takes longer to make advances than would potentially be expected in private sector.
And what sort of difference would it make if they can use cloud? Like what advances does that enable for NCMEC and for the reporting?
So David Teal, our co-author on this report, is really the expert on that side of things. But the way he's described it to us is that you don't necessarily need cloud services to use machine learning classifiers to, for example, make guesses about the age of someone in a photo, but it makes it much, much, much easier to use pre-built classifiers so that you don't have to make your own classifiers. Right. So my understanding is that if NCMEC were able to use cloud services, though I'll note, you know, reasonable people disagree about that as well. If NCMEC were able to use cloud services, it would just be easier for them to do more machine learning, to leverage more machine learning classifiers to better make assessments about files, which could then help law enforcement triage.
Yeah. And then this is different, but in some ways related. You know, there were issues about the API setup of the cyber tip line. There is an API that platforms can use to make it easier to submit stuff, but it's using XML, which is generally outdated technology. Most folks today, you know, use things like JSON, which are a lot easier. And so you're going to have, you know, and on the technology side, people are going to be much more familiar with how to do it if it were a JSON setup than XML. And so it's just more difficult for a lot of companies, you know, especially with limited tech resources themselves to use the API. And I think, I don't remember the details on this, so maybe you can let me know. In the report, it mentions that even some of the larger companies are actually using the manual reporting more than the API. Is that correct? Or
I think one respondent might have said that. Yeah. Though in general, most of the big companies are using the API.
Yeah, I would assume so. That's why that line stood out to me. So from there, I want to move on a little bit to the platform side and where there are issues on the platform. And we've actually the most of the things we wanted to discuss have come up already in this conversation in one form or another, but we might be able to dig a little bit deeper. So one thing is obviously, and this was the thing that everybody knew, I assume you guys knew going into this and was assumed widely before, which is the over-reporting issue, which is that the companies have, you know, very strong incentives to report anything that might be possible, you know, might possibly be seen as CSAM, because if they get it wrong, there's criminal liability on the line, right? And so that just leads to all sorts of overreporting. I think the really illustrative story of this was, which was mentioned in there, was something to do with a meme that keeps getting reported, or at least from one platform keeps getting reported. And no matter how many times law enforcement says, like, we don't stop sending this to us effectively, the platform is like, look, you know, the risk of us getting this wrong is so big that we're going to just keep reporting it because we've determined that it is CSAM. Is that, is there more to that story, or is that the crux of it?
So I'll just start by saying, like, quote unquote, overreporting, you know, came up a lot in our interviews, but also, like, there are platforms that are not reporting at all. Yes. So, you know, a very common thing that happens apparently is an offender reaches out to a child on a platform that does report, and then they tell the child to download Telegram, and then they continue the conversation there. And Telegram did not submit any cyber tip line reports last year to NCMEC. And presumably there's, you know, really egregious activity happening on Telegram that, if submitted, would be prioritized by law enforcement. But yes, so getting back to the meme example, you know, as I think Rihanna mentioned before, the entire system just incentivizes everyone to behave very conservatively. And so if a platform makes an assessment that a meme technically meets the definition of CSAM, even if they know law enforcement disagrees with that decision, they're still going to submit it because the risk to them is that a jury down the line deems that it is in fact CSAM. And perhaps, you know, the meme itself wasn't really the issue, but like, if they had detected the meme, they would have detected some, right, you know, chat transcript that was problematic. And my understanding is that the fine for knowing about CSAM and failing to report it is quite significant. And if it was for a viral image where there were thousands of instances of that image being on your platform, the fine could be enormous.
Yeah. The Telegram issue is definitely an interesting one, and it's mentioned in the report, right, that Telegram doesn't report, and that it is pretty common apparently for you know, folks up to no good to move people to Telegram. It makes me wonder, right? So I talked a little bit about this. You don't get into this much in the report, but it's a discussion that comes up where, you know, Meta is the vast, vast majority reporter, like a huge, I forget what the percentage is, but a huge percentage of the submissions are from Meta. And you see politicians go, you know, to the floor of the Senate, for example, and show this graph of like how many submissions have been made by Meta over time. And it's an up and to the right hockey stick style graph, which is horrifying for all sorts of reasons. But they're sort of using that to blame Meta and saying like Meta is not taking this problem seriously. When I'm looking at that and saying like, this is Meta following the law and reporting and maybe hopefully getting better at finding this stuff. And then your report talks about Telegram, which reported zero. And it, you know, so I wonder how much of the issue are like platforms like Telegram effectively choosing not to participate in this system. And then Meta getting blamed for that. Like, is there some element of that happening?
It's an interesting question. And, you know, we don't really talk in the report too much about specific platforms. Right. Definitely, I think you've identified one of the reasons why everybody we spoke to gets so frustrated when the same number of reports every year gets trotted out again and again, because it doesn't capture a lot of important parts about that system. It may very well be, as you mentioned, that the platforms that report more don't have a larger CSAM problem. It's that they invest a lot more into looking. Or in the case of Meta, Meta has 3 billion people that use one or the other of its various products. It's not really surprising that they would be the largest, right, reporter at that scale. And so, you know, I think that Meta often gets used as a punching bag, as does Google, for widespread ills of the tech industry writ large. But it's a good example of where Meta has publicly documented a lot of the effort that they put into detecting CSAM and other abuse on their platforms. And, you know, let me just be the first one to bring up end-to-end encryption. Like, WhatsApp reports to the Cyber Tipline too, and their numbers went up this year, right, from last year. And they report over 1 million per year as well. They're also a very popular platform. So even in encrypted context, it is possible. And, you know, Meta is an example of where they're trying to do detection and report anyway, again, against a background where nobody has to report. So we can try and say that Telegram is morally culpable for deciding not to invest more. But this gets us back to the point of, like, you can't force anybody's hand here because of the Fourth Amendment issue. Telegram is not based in the US.
Right.
I think they're headquartered in Dubai right now.
Yes.
And they have generally flouted most countries' desires for them to moderate most types of content unless they are absolutely forced to, under threat of being banned from being accessible in a particular jurisdiction. I don't know if that answers your question, but I definitely wanted to sort of underscore the central sort of lead of our report being looking just at the overall number of reports or even what comes out of any given platform doesn't really get you very much of the story.
Right.
We talked to Nick Mick and heard from them about them recently having their first 1 million report day, which was due to a meme that exploded in popularity again. 1 million reports in 1 day of the same image does not indicate that there is a larger problem with regard to CSAM one way or another, in terms of the number of children being abused. And it doesn't say anything about how to go about prioritizing and figuring out which reports to follow up on in order to find the children who are being abused.
The other thing that the number masks is the quality of the of the reports. So, you know, we very intentionally do not talk about any particular platform in this report, but there is one platform that's a relatively high volume reporter that submits extremely detailed reports. They have a big investigations team to pick the most egregious cases and do their own investigation. And they include all of that information in their cyber tip line report. And law enforcement said they're simply more likely to action those reports because the platform is best equipped to know what's happening on their platform. And they did this investigation. And so they, you know, that type of effort is really helpful for this system as well.
And the report does mention a sort of counter example to that too, where there were platforms, or at least there were some respondents who sort of suggested that they were kind of, they held back from trying to provide too much information because they were afraid that, you know, if they provided information that was more like opinion or their thoughts on something, that that could get them in trouble as well. Do you want to talk a little bit to that point?
Yeah, I think these were some of the most fascinating conversations we had, where people had such different opinions about whether it was appropriate to include hunches in these reports. And it just gets to, you know, as Rihanna mentioned, like all of the ambiguity in the system. So we got to see an example cyber tip line report from this platform that does all of this extra investigation. And they just had caveat language throughout, you know, this claim should be verified, this claim should be verified. So that's the balance that they've decided on, but other platforms make different decisions there, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah. So we don't have that much time left. I wanted to discuss a little bit some of the recommendations in the report as well. I think it's important the report has a bunch of recommendations, but, like, you know, what struck me at least is, like, none of these are you know, solving the problem, right? They're sort of marginally moving stuff in the right direction, hopefully. Is that a reasonable take on kind of the recommendations?
So I'm glad you brought this up because I loved your two pieces on our report so much. But if there's one sentence I want to push back on, it's when you say that our recommendations are at the margins. Because I think our recommendation that Congress, platforms, and law enforcement work to massively uplift the technical and analytical capabilities of NCMEC could have a huge impact. So NCMEC being able to make technical changes that better allow law enforcement to triage would just immediately lead to, I think, like the rescue of more children from abuse. So I think, yes, I agree with you. Some of our recommendations are at the margins, but I think some of them are not at the margins.
Fair enough. Good point. Good to push back on that. I guess I yeah. I think I what I meant by that was not that these suggestions aren't helpful or wouldn't be helpful, more that, you know, nothing is going to solve the wider problem, that you're making directional improvements to it, and there are things that can be done to help, but that, you know, this is a much larger societal problem that is going to continue. But fair enough. So is that, do you think that is kind of the major, the most important recommendation that you're talking about then, in terms of like leveling up the technology situation for NCMEC?
I think it's one of the more important recommendations, but Rihanna, do you want to talk about some of the legal recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, the legal recommendations are a little bit on the side of, you know, try and resolve some of the legal ambiguities that exist, to the extent that that's possible, since a lot of these legal inquiries can be very case by case and, you know, fact dependent. It would be good to have a more consistent understanding across all the players in the ecosystem of what the scope of the private search doctrine is. Can you use a hash match, or do you need to have human eyes on review and, you know, constitutionally require trauma for platform moderators in order to open material without a warrant. It would be nice to have a little clearer scope of like where is the line in terms of how much pressure or exhortation of platforms to do this, that, or the other. Would it be okay to just be more direct instead of this weird indirect way that we heard about law enforcement and NCMEC talking to platforms about how to improve their reports? Like, well, it is most effective when platforms include this, that, or the other thing, whereas law enforcement is not able to act on it if it does not include this, that, or right. the other thing. And it's a little, you know, it's a workaround, right? And, you know, we also heard about legal uncertainties or trying to comply with the warrant requirement leading to things like batch requirements, where law enforcement agencies may batch a bunch of otherwise unrelated cyber tips together into a warrant application in order to get the permission from a judge to open the files attached to all those tips. They're not necessarily from the same offender or even the same service, maybe. They don't have any relationship. They're all just put together in order to deal with the volume of these things. And, you know, as somebody who comes from a civil liberties perspective, I would like to see clarity that both allows, you know, children to be rescued, but that is not taking shortcuts around right. People's privacy expectations, which, you know, are strong in some ways, not so strong in others in the United States as compared to other places like Europe, for example. So, you know, the other thing that I want to underline is that in addition to, it would be nice to see the courts grant some clarity, I would like to see Congress focus more on the kinds of targeted improvements that we are talking about in terms of using the power of the purse, in terms of authorizing additional players such as cloud providers to have a role here, rather than these more messaging bills, you know, punishing companies who may already be devoting significant resources to what is always going to be a cost center, and coming up with bills that are constitutionally infirm at best, right. as you and I have talked about before, I believe. It is such a time waster. You know, there are all these improvements that could have sailed through Congress years ago if Congress weren't wasting time with bill after bill that is raising the sorts of Fourth Amendment concerns that everybody, even law enforcement, even NCMEC, much less platforms, are sort of you know, behind the scenes gesturing like, you know, with the please don't upset the apple cart right. when it comes to the Fourth Amendment here. So I'll get off of my soapbox there. But yeah, that's the legal uncertainties definitely motivate a conservative approach to this whole situation. And the only people who I don't see being conservative are, you know, grandstanding politicians. And I'd just like to see them knock that off.
Well, all right. Well, I'm going to wrap this up. But hopefully, if you've listened to this whole thing, you recognize the report is really, really interesting. I think, you know, I get sent stuff all the time to read, and most of it is not particularly enlightening. This was actually like a lot of really new and useful and important stuff that, you know, I was, you know, had ideas about, but was unaware of the details. And I think it was super, super useful and educational, and a worthwhile read for anyone who's interested in this space from all different angles. And so I highly recommend that you go check out the whole report, and you can check out my mostly okay, but perhaps one line too far, write-ups on it as well. Thank you, both of you, for all the, you can tell how much work went into this report, and it is greatly appreciated. So thank you both for everything you put into it, and your co-authors as well, who are not on this recording. But thanks for the work that you did, and thanks for jumping on the podcast as well.
Thanks for having us. Sure.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone who is listening as well. And we'll be back next week. To grab a shovel and dig up the tap. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get. To grab a shovel and dig up the tap. If we don't stand up to them, someone will get. To grab a shovel and dig up the tap.